This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, January 4th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
On this Wednesday edition of the program, help for Washington County residents unable to pay electric or gas bills, an opportunity for fans attending the Cotton Bowl Friday to help people in Texas, and how Seven Hills in Fayetteville is approaching the new year.
KUAF is supported by Keels Creek Winery, featuring a variety of wines using locally grown grapes and local art-themed labels. The winery is located in Eureka Springs and offers a tasting room and art gallery. More information is available on the web at keelscreek.com.
In the heart of downtown Fayetteville, there is a groundbreaking sustainable agriculture institute called Southern SAWG. That's S-A-W-G. Its mission is to reach out to conventional state agriculture agents, as well as to link sustainable farmers to consumers across the southern United States. Southern SAWG is also hosting its annual conference next week, and it will be for the first time in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
The Southern Sustainable Agriculture Working Group, Southern SAWG for short, was established in the early 90s, back when the subject was mostly fodder for hippies. Keith Richards is a contract program coordinator.
Back then, it was the early days of sustainable agriculture, of the movement, and there were a few different emerging organizations in the southern United States that were beginning to see that their work was in parallel with each other. And so some of the leaders of those organizations got together and decided that they wanted an umbrella organization that would help bring their work together and help kind of foster the movement in the South.
20 years later, Southern SAWG, with hundreds of associated organizations across 13 southern states, has assisted more than 10,000 farmers and cultivated good relations with state conventional soil conservation service and agriculture agents, accomplished with a very small staff. Jim Lukens, executive director, works with Julia Sampson, who serves as executive assistant for Southern SAWG.
Our funding streams come from primarily three or four different streams of funding. We have federal funding. We also get private foundations to fund various projects, various portions of our work, and we get funding from individuals.
The federal money is delivered by USDA via Southern Risk Management Agency, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Southern Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Grants. Foundation funding is provided by the Jesse Smith Noyce, Kellogg, and Babcock Foundations. That mix of support, including individual contributions, allows Southern SAWG to survive in a tough economy, while other sustainable ag groups like the Atra Project saw dramatic cuts. Plus, Southern SAWG has developed certain efficiencies, for example, training existing state and federal ag agents already working in the field. Keith Richards.
We train agency personnel like the NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service personnel. They've been told now with new programs under the Farm Bill that they need to work with organic farmers more. So they don't have that experience in doing that. So that's where Southern SAWG can step in, and we can work on a region-wide basis, and we can do trainings for those agency personnel so that they can now help those organic farmers better. So we feel like we reach 10,000 or more farmers through the work that we do, but we aren't the ones that are touching all those farmers. We're actually touching agency personnel. We're actually touching other organizations, and then they're doing the individual work with the farmers. So we act as a regional hub.
Southern SAWG offers a wealth of information to both conventional and organic farmers, including virtual farm tours, a comprehensive professionally produced DVD series titled Natural Farming Systems in the South. Viewers learn planning through production of small-scale organic vegetable and flower farms, for example, pasture-based poultry, dairy, and beef operations. But equally important is bringing those products to the table, so marketing strategies aimed at sustainable consumers are also highlighted. Another critical spoke in this small but strong SAWG wheel is Jean Mills, who operates out of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, as program coordinator, but she's also organizer of the annual conference this year to be hosted in Little Rock. Keith Richards.
The thing we're known most for at Southern SOG is our annual conference. We've been doing it for 20 years. This will be our 21st year, and we move it around the region, all across the 13 states that we work in, but we've never been to Arkansas before. So in 2012, this year, January 18th through the 21st, we're going to be in Little Rock. For the first time, we're going to be in Arkansas. This conference has been the major watering hole for our whole movement, for all the people in the South that are working on sustainable food systems and sustainable agriculture. And it's just an amazing group of people who come to it. We've gotten over 1,200 people at the conference the last couple of years. It was in Chattanooga for the last 3 years. So we're really looking forward to having it in Little Rock. We get over 85 different experts who speak on different issues. We have over 65 different educational sessions at the conference, and it runs for 4 days. We have 5 field trips. We have several intensive sessions that are a day and a half long at the beginning of the conference that teach growers, for instance, how to use hoop houses and grow in hoop houses. Other sessions are on advanced organics to teach them how to take it to the next level in organic production and marketing. And then in the last 2 days, on the 20th and 21st, we have 56 different hour-long or hour-and-a-half-long sessions, running 8 concurrently at a time. And these, we just have people talking about everything under the sun, you know, renewable energy on the farm. Again, more production issues, how to better your soil, how to graze animals in rotational grazings using multi-species. We cover horticulture, we cover animal livestock, we cover fruits, we cover vegetables, and it's all being done by people who are experts out there doing it. We don't bring in just somebody who's just studied this. What we're known for is really having people who are on the ground, farmers who've been farming organically 25 years are often many of our speakers, or community food systems workers who have actually gone out there and started community gardens and worked in schools to bring more local food into their schools. So we really pride ourselves in having bringing together a great group of people who are doing this work across the South and then sharing that work with 1,200 other people.
Julia Sampson says conference field trips are a total highlight.
We have 5 field trips scheduled for the Arkansas area. 1 field trip is to Arkansas Natural Produce. That's the farm of Jay and Deanna Fulbright. And Jay Fulbright used to be on the Southern SOG Board of Directors. But they have an amazing farm spread there with hoop houses and greenhouses. They probably got 15, 20 greenhouses. They sell to local businesses and restaurants. They sell to the Peabody and Chef Andre there at the Peabody. They sell to Whole Foods in Little Rock. They've got an amazing operations of greens and flowers. It's wonderful. In addition to the field trips, one of our featured speakers this year will be Will Allen. And Will Allen had been coming to our conference for about 10 years. However, in the last 3 years, he's gone into this status of being a rock star almost since he won a MacArthur Award, the Genius Grant. And he's planning to be at our conference and conduct one of the special sessions before the conference in addition to another session. So Will Allen, retired basketball player turned farmer, will be there to teach all kinds of things about vertical farming and vermicomposting, etc.
And the field trips often make the strongest impression.
I can remember having an attendee at our annual conference who went on a field trip and saw an apple orchard and exactly a disease problem that was going on in that in that apple orchard? Well, he recognized that that very same thing was happening in their brand new orchard, which was an orchard attached to a food bank outside of Texas, in Texas area. He saw that, and he was able to go home and apply the organic principles to save that apple orchard because he had been on a field trip at Southern Sog and actually saw that disease in process.
A food bank that grows a portion of its own produce organically? That's revolutionary. Southern Sog on occasion breaches regional boundaries with USDA funding, one time taking a group of rural Georgia stakeholders and leaders to learn about rural economic development in Wisconsin. Keith Richards.
And we took this group of people, which included several farmers, included a co-op extension agent, included one of their bankers from this county. We went up and we visited several farms and we looked at several projects that were going on in Wisconsin. And since then, this county has become a leader in sustainable agriculture and in local food systems. They have gotten all kinds of initiatives where farmers are working together cooperatively, where they're selling their products locally, where they've started farmers markets, where they're doing things that they learned in Wisconsin.
But Southern Sog is also working in the heart of the machine, educating federal lawmakers about the need for bills, including the Local Farms, Food, and Jobs Act, that seeks to expand federal farm bill programs to support local and regional farm and food systems.
One of the things that we realize that is a barrier to sustainability is policy. A lot of the policies that we have locally, statewide, and federally are sometimes not encouraging of farmers to be more sustainable or of our food system to be more sustainable. So we realize that we need a component to do some type of advocacy and education around policy issues. So we help bring people together both at our conference and also throughout the year to talk to each other about some of these issues. We highlight special initiatives that are going on in Congress and let people know about laws or federal legislation that's coming up and how they can give input on it so that they make it more lean towards favoring sustainability.
But what sets Southern Sog apart, Keith Richards says, is its diversity.
One of the basic tenets of Southern Sog that we were set up with is to have diversity in almost everything we do. You go back to we were founded at the Highlander Center, and there's cultural diversity. There's diversity across different economic spheres. There's diversity across the states. There's diversity within the types of farmers that we work with. And we found that this is really a strength of Southern Sog. So when you go to our conference, you'll see that it's not like your normal conference. It's not just a black farmers conference, or it's not just a white farmers conference, or it's not just a farmers conference for people who are doing, big row crops. It's a conference that brings together African-American farmers, Caucasian farmers, Hispanic farmers, and all these other community groups that are working with those farmers, too. So they all come and they all can learn from each other and they can feel like one big community. And that's what's we've been told that's what makes our conference special and Southern Sog special, is it makes it feel like we're a welcoming community for everyone.
And you can get a sense of Southern Sog's prevailing diversity just by glancing. At the homepage. Details about Southern Sustainable Agriculture Working Group can be found on the web, including registration for the annual conference. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more and to register for this year's conference taking place January 18th through the 21st in Little Rock, visit ssawg.org.
And this reminder, the Mercy Family Y will host the 7th annual Tux on the Run 5K race on the 14th of this month. It begins at 10 a.m. at the Mercy Family Y on Village Parkway in Rogers. Those interested in competing can stop by the Mercy Y and pick up a registration form or register on the website active.com. And if you'd like more information, you can contact Northwest Arkansas Mercy Family YMCA. Their number 273-9622.
Earth, sky, Wednesday, January 4th, the Earth will be closest to the Sun for the year this evening, according to clocks in the U.S.
For the whole world, Earth's closest point to the Sun, called its perihelion, will come at 1 in the morning Universal Time on January 5th. Earth comes closest to the Sun every year in January during winter for the Northern Hemisphere. We're always farthest from the Sun in July during Northern Hemisphere summer.
So you can see it can't be Earth's distance from the Sun that causes the seasons. In fact, our planet has seasons because of its tilt on its axis. Earth's tilt causes the northern and southern hemispheres to trade places in receiving the Sun's light and warmth most directly as our world orbits the Sun.
Earth's closest and farthest points to the Sun don't cause the seasons, but they do affect the lengths of the seasons. When Earth is closest to the Sun for the year, as it is now, our world is moving fastest in orbit. The result is that Northern Hemisphere winters and Southern Hemisphere summers are the year's shortest seasons.
So that's our planet Earth closest to the Sun in 2012 on January 5th at hour number one, Universal Time. I'm Deborah Bird.
And I'm Jorge Salazar. Come to the Tonight area of earthsky.org for sky charts. EarthSky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
If you heard our Christmas morning edition of Ozarks, you may remember our take on the 12 days of Christmas. Instead of maids a-milking and lords a-leaping, we substituted volunteer and donation possibilities for area nonprofits. One of the nonprofits Kyle talked to was Seven Hills Homeless Center in Fayetteville. John Woodward, the executive director of Seven Hills, says as 2012 begins, there are plenty of needs and plenty of plans for the center.
Well, Seven Hills has needs across the board with regard to lots of areas of help and giving. So not only do we need a lot of basic items, such as hygiene items, such as clothing, such as monetary assistance to help people get into housing, but we also would ask for people's time. That's really important to us. We have lots of really good volunteers that come in and help us throughout all programs. We're also beginning a couple of exciting programs this year, an outreach program throughout Benton and Washington counties that we're going to need a whole lot of volunteer efforts on, and a mentorship sort of program for some of our clients who really would be benefited by having mentors in the community that could reconnect them to a support network. Specifically, though, the way Seven Hills does business with our clients is we use a lot of meeting of immediate needs, whether that be food or clothing or assistance on a utility bill, so somebody isn't cold, or assistance with some rent at within another program. We use meeting those immediate needs to try to help our clients learn to become more planful in their lives. So we do housing stabilization plans with them, and we help them to build relationships with us and within the community to where they don't have cycles of homelessness or cycles to where they're falling into times of poverty and such.
When you mentioned that you can use volunteer hours, someone might hear this and say, well, I don't know what I can offer. So what can someone offer with their time?
Well, basically, if they want to help us do anything from facilities maintenance to volunteering in some of the administrative tasks that we have to, as I was referencing in our new outreach program that's beginning in the new year, helping to go out with us in the communities right here in Northwest Arkansas that are needing assistance to be able to bridge the gap. I think the economic times that we're in the midst of right now, it's even difficult for people in our community at this point to have the gas money enough to get to the food banks. So what we're trying to do is not only just bring food right to people, but also meet a bunch of other immediate needs right where folks are at, rather than having them have to spend gas to get to the places where they need to get to get the help. So we're trying to even kind of become more and more proactive in our approach of helping and having volunteers to be able to be there to do, even on a cold day, hand out some coffee and get some initial information so when they get up to the front of the line, they can get their needs met in a quick manner. I think the other thing that volunteers do is they show individuals and families who are homeless or on the verge of becoming homeless the fact that the community cares about them. And one of the biggest factors in homelessness psychologically is the fact that you can feel really, really isolated, like you're the only one kind of in the midst of this position. And being that more than 75% of who's homeless right now in Northwest Arkansas are homeless for the first time ever. They've had no experience with homelessness before that. It can be a real isolating situation. And having a volunteer from the community there just to show that the community cares, and by just having simple conversations and in trying to meet those basic needs, it really makes a huge difference.
Wow. So you can donate quite a bit without, if that is your preference, without spending money. You can also use monetary support. And as you mentioned, there are items that can be donated just to help in the immediacy, like toiletries and hygiene items.
Absolutely. And on our website, which is www.number7hillscenter.org, we actually always have an updated wish list because the needs of our clients change, especially seasonally, and especially for those clients who are unsheltered. The list that is on that webpage, on our webpage, is updated, like I said, monthly or more often with our most current needs. So that's the best place to get those. And also, I'd be remiss in not saying we're in the midst of our annual giving campaign as well. And the Willard and Pat Walker Charitable Foundation has really been generous to us as usual. And they've given us $50,000 of matching money for the community to match. We try to make one big push per year to get the community to help us that way. And that kind of fills in the gap with keeping the lights on so we can do the sorts of services that we do in the community.
John Woodward is the executive director for Seven Hills Homeless Center in Fayetteville. You can find out more at sevenhillscenter.org. That's the number 7hillscenter.org.
Ahead on Ozarks, more chances to help. Fans from Arkansas headed to the Cotton Bowl in Texas can spend a few hours before the game participating in a community service project.
And a chance for Washington County residents unable to pay energy bills to receive some help through the Economic Opportunity Agency.
This week on This American Life, Mike Daisy was on an Apple computer fan site and read about a guy who bought an iPhone, and it wasn't blank.
It had information on it from inside the factory. And in fact, in the camera roll, there were pictures on it from inside the factory.
Mike stared at those pictures, then flew to China to stand outside the factory gates and meet these workers.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 6 and Sunday morning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Governor Mike Beebe says he was misled by the Arkansas Forestry Commission about its budget, prompting the layoff of 36 employees later this month. The governor's office yesterday detailed problems within the agency, which had blamed a decline in timber sales for a budgetary shortfall. But governor spokesman Matt DeCampbell says there was much more to it than that.
It looks like the biggest problem that led to this sudden shortfall and led to the need for these 36 layoffs was some miscertification and misuse of federal grant money at the Forestry Commission. They had a number of grants that they regularly received from the U.S. Department of Agriculture that they used for various forestry needs, but some of that money was being improperly used as operations money and used to pay salaries and other day-to-day costs.
But Republican State Representative Brian King says emails have revealed the governor's office canceled a meeting scheduled in 2010 to talk about the commission's financial woes, and he says the governor was just playing politics.
The Forestry Commission was in a financial crisis. The governor's office knew it. They did not want to talk about bad news, about layoffs or raising taxes before the election. So they basically axed the whole thing right before the election.
Legislative hearings are scheduled this week on the budget shortfall. And meanwhile, the governor will ask lawmakers to approve more than $2.5 million for the Arkansas Forestry Commission during the upcoming legislative session.
The Ozark St. Francis National Forest, Big Piney Ranger District, is calling for public comment on proposed management activities on 35,000 acres of forest land covering portions of southeastern Newton, northeastern Pope, and southwestern Searcy counties. The Bearcat Hollow Phase 2 project area has been inventoried by U.S. Forest Service staff and was found to be overgrown and in certain places at risk for wildfires. The proposed management would include logging and prescribed burns, as well as herbicide application to open the forest canopy and to create pasture forage for new elk populations. Jim Dixon is the Integrated Resources Team Leader and Acting District Ranger for the Big Piney Ranger District, which includes the Buffalo National River.
It's on the lower end of the river over towards Gene Rush. It's west of Witt Springs area and on the Richland Creek drainage.
The Bearcat Hollow Project is part of a larger ongoing Forest Service plan,
which is management area 3K in our forest plan, which allows us to make larger openings for all wildlife, not just Rocky Mountain elk, but it's good for deer and a lot of migratory birds that come in. It's good for all types of species.
The Forest Service manages habitat, while the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission oversees elk herds and other wildlife. The site also includes more than 100 miles of equestrian trails, which will be improved, and the proposal calls for the eradication of non-native plant species. All adjacent landholders have been contacted by the Forest Service about the proposed management, and the public is invited to comment. The deadline for public comment on the U.S. Forest Service Bearcat Hollow Phase 2 project is January 13th.
The 2012 Kiplinger's Report on the best college and university values in the country is again placing the University of Arkansas among the top 60 best values. The latest edition of the list, published yesterday, ranked Arkansas as the 53rd best value in the country for in-state students, 56 for out-of-state students. The rankings are a slight uptick from last year's rankings of 57th and 58th. The Kiplinger list is drawn from a survey of 500 public universities across the country. The rankings are based on both academic measurements, student SAT or ACT scores, admission and retention rates, student-faculty ratios, and 4- and 6-year graduation rates. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and the University of Florida at Gainesville topped the list. No other colleges or universities from Arkansas made the top 100.
The Valley View School Board put a stop to efforts by two patrons to have the book The Kite Runner removed from the Advanced Placement English curriculum. The board took no action at its meeting this week, which kept the book about Afghanistan on the reading list. A request to ban the book had made national news. The Jonesboro Sun reports the book drew objections because of its religious and sexual content. No one at the meeting spoke in favor of banning the book, but a number of people spoke in favor of keeping it. Norman Stafford, a member of the ACLU board in Arkansas and a retired ASU professor, says the book is an important piece of literature.
The Kite Runner is something I would think that many people should want young adults to read. And this was an AP class. These are students who are taking an advanced class for college credit. It gives a positive portrait of Afghan Muslims, but it also criticizes the extremism. It's the same kind of thinking that leads people to ban books. The villains of the piece are the Taliban.
Stafford says Valley View students who read The Kite Runner will arrive at college with a good foundation in English and global affairs.
The Ozark affiliate of the Susan G. Komen for the Cure says it is releasing $50,000 in emergency funds to help women in 6 area counties. The group says the previously granted funds and breast care funds were not enough to cover all women in need. The 3 emergency grants will benefit the Women's Center of Sparks in Fort Smith, Community Clinic in Rogers and Springdale, and North Arkansas Partnership for Health Education in Harrison.
The University of Arkansas men's basketball team improved to 11-3 last night with an 83-66 win over Savannah State in Bud Walton Arena. Arkansas next hosts Mississippi State Saturday night.
The University of Arkansas gymnastics team's schedule has been ranked as the 3rd most difficult in the country. Arkansas will open the 2012 season Friday night at the Cancun Classic against a field that includes 4 nationally ranked squads. Arkansas finished last year ranked 9th and is ranked 11th in the preseason poll published by Gym Info. The University of Arkansas Tech's program in the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences will be featured Wednesday afternoon on ESPNU's SEC Stories of Success. That airs at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Tibetans in Exile Today, known as the Tech's program, gives University of Arkansas students the opportunity to spend 3 weeks gathering oral histories from elderly Tibetans. The program will be rebroadcast at a later date as well.
Arkansas pitcher DJ Baxendale is ranked as the 25th best college baseball player in the country by collegebaseballdaily.com. Baxendale is the third Razorback to be ranked in College Baseball Daily's countdown of the top 100 players in college baseball. Sophomore pitcher Ryan Stanek was ranked 57th, while sophomore infielder Dominic Ficicello came in at number 75. Friday night, the Arkansas Razorbacks will take on the Kansas State Wildcats during the Cotton Bowl, which will take place inside Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas. In addition to the game, events such as a hog wild party and a pep rally have been scheduled throughout the week. Besides celebrating, fans making the trip to Texas can also spend some time doing good for others in the Arlington community by participating in a volunteer service project Thursday morning. Yesterday, I spoke to Angela Oxford, director of the Center for Community Engagement, who explained why the service project was incorporated into the Razorbacks bowl game appearance.
Last year for the Sugar Bowl, Arkansas fans were invited to volunteer with Ohio State. And it's a tradition Ohio State's been doing for several years. And apparently they took on the challenge from Florida State years ago. And so it's something other colleges have been doing. We wanted to find a way to say thank you to our host city, which is Dallas, the Arlington area, and also bring fans together from both teams and do something together where we could get to know one another and just have a good time lending a hand in a community where we'll be enjoying ourselves for the next few days.
So the University of Arkansas has helped organize it this year. Are there any specific groups from the university who have helped set this project up?
Well, the Division of Student Affairs has been working on the project along with our office, and we have a group of student team leaders who are students from the Volunteer Action Center who are going down to help with the leadership piece of the project. And we have the University of Arkansas Spirit Squad. People from university administration will be there. We have some alumni and several other groups that will be represented at the project.
And what will volunteers be doing at this project?
Well, we'll be at Mission Arlington, which is a large nonprofit that does just a variety of things. They serve 1,000 people a day, which is pretty remarkable. And we will be sorting clothing, food, and then other items like they have furniture items, things like that. But then they also have a clinic. So any of our students who are pre-med or anyone who's a health professional who will be there, they can be used and give their time in the clinics. There's a dental clinic and a medical clinic, and they always need health professionals to assist in those areas.
So how did you come to know of Mission Arlington, and how was that the organization that was chosen to be helped?
Well, you know, we talked to a number of people. We talked to the Volunteer Center of North Texas, and we talked to the University of Texas at Arlington, and everyone recommended that we talk to Mission Arlington. They all just said it's a great place to volunteer. They're great to work with. And they also just do great programming in the community. And so we've gotten so much affirmation about working with them, and we're excited about that. But through Volunteer Center of North Texas and the University of Texas Arlington, they're the ones who pointed us in the direction of Mission Arlington.
And volunteers will be on hand working on things from 9 to noon on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And can anybody volunteer?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyone who's in Dallas that day is welcome to join us. And so, and we'll have free T-shirts, and Kansas State fans will be there as well, and it should be a great time.
And do you need to sign up ahead of time? Or?
You know, it'd be great. It'll help us just to have a sense of how many people will be there. But you can do that at volunteer.uark.edu.
And I guess just finally, while people are down there celebrating and getting excited and tailgating and going to the pep rally and just being excited about the game, why is this something that they might enjoy doing on their trip to Dallas?
Well, I think it's going to give them a perspective about the city of Dallas that they might not have a chance to see otherwise. They'll get a chance to see an organization that's doing a lot of good in that community. And it's also in Arlington, and it's where the game's actually going to be taking place. A lot of the folks will be staying about 20 miles from the stadium, so it'll just be a great opportunity for them to actually be in the community and the people who live right around the Cotton Bowl, where the Cotton Bowl actually occurs. And so it's just a nice way, I think, to say to those folks thanks while we're there.
Mission Arlington is located at 210 West South Street in Arlington, Texas. Volunteer registration and check-in is scheduled for 8:30 to 9 tomorrow morning. You can also register online at volunteer.uark.edu.
This winter, like the last several, the Economic Opportunity Agency in Washington County will help many Washington County residents who are having difficulties paying home energy bills. Ben McClintock is the Senior Development Officer for EOA. He says the Winter Assistance Program enrollment begins Monday at the Jones Center for Families in Springdale. There is potential help for people with different levels of need, including those who have received shutoff notices.
It's broken into two parts, and actually applicants may use each phase of the program once per calendar year. And so the regular winter program helps with bills that, like you mentioned, are not late. And then the crisis program are for people that have shutoff notices, or if there are certain other criteria. For example, if they use liquid propane for the heating of their home, or if they have a wood burning stove or something of that nature to heat their home. If their total capacity of like their propane tank is below 10% of being full, that also qualifies somebody for the crisis program.
This is not the first year that the Economic Opportunity Agency has helped with the Home Energy Assistance Program. Last year, more than 4,000 families were able to be helped in this process.
Yes, it was actually we were able to help. If I can pull that number up. We were able to help about 4,200 families in Washington County last year with their heating and energy bills.
Any idea whether you'll have a larger number applying this year?
That is really going to be contingent mostly on how much funding is allocated to us from the United States Congress and then distributed to EOA along with the other 15 community action agencies located throughout Arkansas via Little Rock. I know in 2009 we had a fairly significant amount that was allocated through Congress. It was in excess of $1 million that was made available for distributing to qualifying households in Washington County. And I do know that last year's amount was about $700,000. So we have not gotten exact hard numbers yet from Little Rock or from Washington, D.C. as to how much funding is going to be made available to us. But we obviously want to help as many families as we possibly can, as the National Weather Service is forecasting another fairly harsh winter for us in Arkansas.
And open registration begins January 9th. Applications made in person?
Yes, people can come to the Jones Family Resource Center, which is located at 614 East Emma Avenue in Springdale, just to the west of the Jones Center for Families. And they can use any one of the main public entrances to come into the facility. They'll want to come to the central lobby area in the center of the Jones Family Resource Center. And we'll have a staff on hand to help with the processing of in-person applications. Because of staffing limitations and just our normal hours of operation, we'll be accepting applications in person Monday through Thursday of every week from 8 o'clock in the morning until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then on Friday from 8 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock in the morning. Because, again, of staffing limitations and just being able to, we want to be able, if somebody is making the effort and expending what limited resources they typically have, because we deal with a lot of elderly clients that are living on fixed incomes, we hate for somebody to drive to the Family Resource Center and we can't help them and process their application. So that being said, I would definitely recommend people call ahead, and we will only be serving a maximum of 250 in-person interviews on a daily basis. Now, if somebody were to mail in their claim to that same address at 614 East Emma Avenue in Springdale, the zip code is 72764, we will be more than happy to process an application by mail if they have sent in all of the proper paperwork, and that is available on our website.
And that website is?
It is EOAWC.org, Economic Opportunity Agency, Washington County.org.
And we mentioned that WC Washington County. That means that for this particular program, this is open to residents of Washington County.
That is correct, Kyle. We, because of the way that the geographic districts are broken up in Arkansas, EOA of Washington County is only allowed to distribute funds to help people with their electric and heating bills if they are a Washington County resident only. The, for example, if people that are in further north in northwest Arkansas, whether it's Benton County, Carroll County, or Madison County, those residents would probably want to go to the Office of Human Concern, which is our sister agency that handles those three counties.
Ben McClintock is the Senior Development Officer for Economic Opportunity Agency in Washington County. For more information about the Winter Assistance Program, 872-7479 or online at EOAWC.org. And again, enrollment begins in person at the Jones Center for Families on Monday. This is Ozarks at Large.
Late last year, the youth-oriented United We Dream Network hosted its third national conference in Texas to discuss the next steps for the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act is a bipartisan bill that would provide a path to citizenship for undocumented young people. There, Ozarks at Large's Zesna Garcia found diverse subgroups united in a common struggle.
For 3 days, 450 student activists and supporters of the DREAM Act from 30 different states and 50 organizations met in Texas for their third national congress. The Development Relief and Education for Alien Minors Act, introduced in 2001, would provide conditional permanent residency to undocumented youth who've lived in the U.S. for a certain period of time, graduated from high school, and complete 2 years in the military or a minimum of a bachelor's degree. Reintroduced in 2010, the bipartisan bill passed the U.S. House of Representatives but failed in the Senate, falling a mere 5 votes short. Matias Ramos, a United We Dream Network board member, explained why the DREAM Act continues to stall.
It's a background issue for the Congress, and it hasn't been made a priority. Whenever the Republicans have been in the majority, they've opted not to push it. Not only opted not to push it, but they've pushed for anti-immigrant legislation or heavy immigration enforcement legislation. When the Democrats are in power, they haven't made it a priority. They say they support the issue, they consider it something that fits their values, but it's not on their priority deck.
As the DREAM movement grows, subgroups emerge. For example, the artist movement called Dreamers Adrift. Co-founder Julio Salgado says he's culturally American and that he's worked many physically demanding jobs in order to pay for his education.
I wanted to go to college, and I felt that going to school and getting an education was going to be the only way for me to better myself. I'm not talking about financially, but better myself here and be able to defend myself with my mind. Again, I felt that, you know, I had to go through that, through those, you know, those jobs, those, you know, washing dishes, doing construction, because at the end I ended up with a degree that, even though I can get deported, it's a degree that nobody can take away from me. So being in this, you know, the so-called DREAM Act movement, empower myself to to come out of the shadows and say, I am here, I am queer, I am undocumented and unafraid.
Another subgroup, which debuted at this year's conference, is QUIP, the Queer Undocumented Immigrant Project. It empowers lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender undocumented youth to seek leadership development while embracing their sexual identities. Only recently have undocumented youth come out of the shadows to reveal their status. But being undocumented and gay creates a double burden. Many fear being rejected by family, or worse, getting kicked out of their homes. So many choose to stay in the closet. During the first meeting of QUIP, individuals were encouraged to tell their stories. A few students courageously came out for the first time. Because of the severity of this particular situation, those present requested that their identities remain anonymous. Lisa, not her real name, says she and her family were refugees from Vietnam. She lost both of her parents early on and lived undocumented with her two older sisters for most of her youth. Lisa remembers what it was like to come out to her loved ones.
The greatest achievement I've ever done was actually come out to her. And no matter what life threw at me, the fact that I was able to come out and say, I'm queer, was the best experience that I've ever had. The most empowering thing that's, and the most liberating thing that's ever happened to me. And whenever we're petitioning on campus, and I would tell them about undocumented youth and how it's also important to recognize and politicize the word queer, because in the Vietnamese culture, there isn't a word for a lesbian. There is gay because they mock it. There's the word gay, but we're not even allowed to teach the younger generation the word lesbian. Because not only are you a woman, but you're a woman of color and you're a queer woman of color.
Young adults, much like Lisa, who identify with both the LGBT community and the undocumented community, are locked in a double closet. But at the United We Dream gathering, QUIP provided all members a chance to open their perspectives on the movement and accept each other's differences to create common ground to prepare for the coming year. National coordinator for United We Dream, Carlos Saavedra, says the more people understand each other, the better they can work together.
The reason why we're here is because we want to be prepared for those changes, and we want to be able for people to trust each other and trust our own instincts as a network as things come up. And you don't get trust just from getting a good strategy. You get trust from people knowing each other. So that's why we put this large convenings, because people talk, people relate, but more than anything, people trust each other.
And together, these diverse young dreamers will continue to advocate and fight for their right to higher education and finally achieve their American dream. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zesna Garcia.
For more information, visit unitedwedream.org or dreamersadrift.com.
Time now for a trivia question. Winners today will receive a Tim Ernst 2012 Arkansas calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Another copy of a Fort Smith Symphony CD recording. This is the first one they recorded, not the current one.
Okay.
But still very good. And four tickets to a Malco movie theater.
All right.
Because today's is kind of tough.
Okay. What's the question?
All right. Last night, the Iowa caucus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum in a dead heat. Romney declared the winner by something like 8 votes.
Mm-hmm.
But last night, if you go further down, Michelle Bachmann received 5% of the vote. She becomes thus the third woman ever to receive at least 1% of her party's support in an Iowa caucus. Hillary Clinton, back in 2008, mm-hmm. received 29% of the Democratic vote in the Iowa caucus, finishing second to future President Barack Obama. Who's the only other woman in the history of the Iowa caucus to receive at least 1% of her party's support?
If you know, give us a call at 800-522-5823. That's 800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 4th of January, 2012. Today's the birthday of Sir Isaac Newton, born in Woolsthorpe, England, 1643, born prematurely on a farm, his father having died 3 months before. Newton was brought up to take over the farm, but he wasn't a good farmer, and his uncle suggested that he go to college instead, and so he did. He went to Cambridge. And when the school shut down during a plague year, Newton went home, studied mathematics and physics on his own, And it was then that he developed his theories of gravity and optics. Returned to Cambridge to teach mathematics, his first great achievement, the invention of a reflecting telescope. At the age of 43, Newton published his Principia, which overturned nearly everything mankind had believed about the universe up to that point. He proved that the celestial bodies were governed by the same laws of physics as objects on Earth. He established the three laws of motion. The first law, that objects at rest tend to remain at rest and objects in motion tend to remain in motion unless they are acted upon by an external force. The second law, that an applied force on an object equals the rate of change of its momentum with time. And the third law, that for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. It's the birthday of Doris Kearns Goodwin, born Brooklyn, 1943, author of biographies, Lyndon Johnson, the Fitzgeralds and the Kennedys, currently at work on a biography of Theodore Roosevelt, author of the book Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, a book widely talked about around Washington, and during the 2008 campaign, Barack Obama mentioned Goodwin's book in interviews, saying it was essential reading. And after he won the Democratic nomination, he named a former opponent, Joe Biden, as his running mate. And after he was elected, he appointed Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. Today's the birthday of Louis Braille, born in Couvray, France, 1809, famous organist and cellist who came up with an alphabet of raised dots that could be read by fingertip by the blind, Braille. Something of a dying art today. There are now far more audio versions of books than there are books printed in Braille, and there are software programs to convert written text into audio. Today, only about 10% of blind children learn to read Braille in this country. Here's a poem for today, a poem from the early 19th century by a poet named Sidney Smith, Recipe for a Salad. To make this condiment, your poet begs the pounded yellow of two hard-boiled eggs, two boiled potatoes passed through kitchen sieve, smoothness and softness to the salad give. Let onion atoms lurk within the bowl and half-suspected animate the whole. Of mordant mustard, add a single spoon, distrust the condiment that bites so soon. But deem it not, thou man of herbs, a fault to add a double quantity of salt. And lastly, o'er the flavored compound toss a magic soup spoon of anchovy sauce. O green and glorious, O herbaceous treat, 'twould tempt the dying anchorite to eat. Back to the world he'd turn his fleeting soul and plunge his fingers in the salad bowl. Serenely full, the epicure would say, fate cannot harm me, I have dined today. An old poem by Sidney Smith, Recipe for a Salad. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time for our answer to the trivia question. Last night, Michelle Bachmann received 5% of the Republican vote in the Iowa caucus. In 2008, Hillary Clinton received 29% of the Democratic vote in the Iowa caucus. Who is the only other woman to receive at least 1% of her party support in an Iowa caucus?
I have no idea.
Got to go back to 1972.
Okay, I shouldn't have to know that.
Because that's pre you.
It's pre me.
Shirley Chisholm received 1% of the Democratic vote in 1972. She was a congresswoman from New York State. Mm-hmm. She was the first African American woman ever elected to U.S. Congress, and she ran for president.
Well, there you go.
Okay. So, many people guessed that it was Elizabeth Dole. Mm-hmm. Dole did run for president in the 90s. However, she had suspended her campaign because of financial problems before the Iowa caucus, so she was not even a candidate in that caucus.
All right, we'll put the correct answers in Ceramic Cow and draw a winner in just a minute. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Coal Hill.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And you have another message?
I do. Want to say happy birthday to my little brother who's turning 21 today.
21.
So not so little.
That's right. Younger.
Younger.
You would say.
Yeah.
Well, happy birthday to Dominic.
David.
David. Dominic is older.
Yeah, you're older.
Okay. Well, happy birthday to David. thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday.